Chris Tilney wishing you all the best. Happy trails.
Until we meet again.
We'll sit back for a little conversation. So brew another cup, and we'll be back with you during the morning show next hour on WRCO-FM in Richland Center, where the news this hour at 9 o'clock, sponsored by Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, serving Southwest Wisconsin since 1889, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Jeffrey Epstein's convicted co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell is set to meet with Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche in Florida today. Blanche and Attorney General Pam Bondi saying they want to know if she has any information about anyone who committed crimes against victims. Also today, says ABC's Aaron Katursky.
The Wall Street Journal reports Bondi and Blanche informed the president in May his name appears multiple times in the Epstein files. The paper reports they told Trump they did not plan to release them because they contain child pornography and personal information about victims. Trump deferred to their decision. Last week, Trump denied Bondi told him his name was in the files.
A federal judge refusing to unseal the grand jury testimony surrounding the Epstein investigation. Following criticism of Fed Chair Jerome Powell for not lowering interest rates, President Trump visits the Fed headquarters in Washington today. A plane crashing in far eastern Russia, wreckage on the side of a hill, 48 people killed. This is ABC News. Soldiers on the border between Thailand and Cambodia stepping up the escalation in the two nations' conflict. Small arms, artillery, and rocket fire killing at least 11 people, most of them civilians. Thailand sealing all land border crossings. What's a Red Sox game without a hot dog? Could find out in Boston soon as Fenway Park's concession staff threatened to walk off the job.
Prepping for a move never taken before.
And if we don't get it,
shut it down!
Their union president threatening a first ever strike at the ballpark just as the Red Sox open a three-game series against the Dodgers starting Friday.
They need to be respected. And if they're not respected in the next 48 hours, there will be a strike at Fenway Park.
More than 1,000 union members who work for food service provider Aramark at Fenway and neighboring MGM Music Hall want higher wages and limits on automation.
That's ABC's John Atwater in Boston. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
They say the more things change, the more they stay the same. And that's certainly true at the Phoenix Center. A longtime favorite in Richland County, it remains the go-to destination for bowling, great food, and lasting memories. It's where friends gather, laughs are shared, and good times roll, literally. Open Monday through Saturday starting at 11 a.m. and closed on Sundays. The Phoenix Center continues to serve up favorites like their legendary pizza and friendly atmosphere. Call 649-7469 for more information or carry out.
Thanks to the Schultz Mortgage Team for sponsoring WRCO Hometown Weather Watch. Call 608-738-8765 to learn how you can buy a home with less than 20% down.
High temps in the mid-80s today, maybe a thunderstorm this afternoon. And partly cloudy, areas of fog tonight and a low of 65. Partly sunny, warm and muggy Friday and a high of 85. Rain likely later Friday night, maybe a thunderstorm, a low of 67. And Saturday, rain and thunderstorms tapering off around midday. Partly sunny later and a high of 84.
If you run a small business these days, you know just how challenging things can get. But you're a natural-born problem solver, so it's all good. Still, it doesn't hurt to have some good neighborly help. Like yourself, State Farm agents are also small business owners. This enables them to help you choose the right insurance coverage to fit your small business needs. So why not insure with a small business with a fellow small business owner who also happens to be a good neighbor? Call, text, or stop by Julie Karen State Farm in downtown Richland Center. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Amplify Health by Gunderson Baskerville is proud to welcome family medicine physician Elizabeth White to our growing primary care team. With a special focus on pediatrics and women's health, Dr. White believes in meeting patients where they're at and matching medical plans with individual values and goals. Schedule your appointment with Dr. White in Baskerville or Muscadet online through MyChart or call 375-4144.
At U.S. Cellular, you can get $1,000 off any phone with no trade-in. It's great for people who love saving money, like someone who likes to haggle, even at self-checkout.
$10.99.
I'll give you $7.
$10.99.
Okay, $8.
Calling for assistance.
Ha!
I knew I was wearing you down.
Get $1,000 off any phone with no trade-in. And we'll pay off your current contract when you switch. U.S. Cellular. Built for us. Terms apply. Visit uscellular.com for details.
You better hold on to your overalls.
My overalls?
Cazenovia's tractor pull is back, and it's louder than Uncle Earl's chili burps. It's the 13th Annual Showdown, now Saturday, July 26th.
July 26th.
At Cazenovia Memorial Park, we're talking Too Hot to Farm,
Diesel Trucks,
Outlaws,
and the wildest ride of all,
Run What You Brung.
Run What You Brung.
Starts at 7 p.m. and just $10 to get in. Kids 10 and under are free as long as they ain't driving. Bring your boots, your buddies, and maybe some earplugs. It's going to be a pull to remember.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. On our morning show today, we're bringing in a cousin of mine, Michael Nee, who is in the studio with us, another of Richland County's interesting folks. Good to have him in here. In fact, I think we talked last year at the Walk with Grace. Yeah, you and I were there. We kind of contemplated having you on. So, Michael, it's good to have you in the studio today.
Well, thanks, Phil. This is the first time I've been in the WRCO studio since way back in the 50s when the studio was down in the swamp by Pine River. I went to Pine River School, which is just down the road from this studio, and we practiced and practiced and practiced this song. I believe for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows, and so on. So we went up to the WRCO studio, and we all sang. You know, we're just little kids, of course. And that was an interesting experience. And it was years later, my mother said, "You kids were awful."
Do you remember, was that on the Bob Bodden show?
I have no idea. At that time, I was so naive. I thought that all the music that came over the radio, you actually had the singers and the band were up there playing.
I think a lot of people did, actually. So you're Mr. Genealogy as well, Michael. How are you and I related?
I almost printed out a genealogical chart of our relationship. And this will come in with Bolivia also.
Okay.
The genealogy part is Coleman Nee and his six sons and his wife came to Richland County in 1860. And they had spent 10 years in upstate New York. I don't know exactly what they were doing. Working on the railroad or tanning factories or something. And then they came to Horse Creek. And there were a bunch of Galway Irish moved into the Horse Creek area. But very soon he bought the farm across Willow Creek from your farm. And that little brick house and the old little old barn. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first Nee farm. And from there, they spread out. So one of his sons is your great-grandfather, and one of his other sons is my great-grandfather. So I think we're third cousins.
Okay.
But genealogy gets so complicated when you get so many people and so many generations, and so this person marries into that family and so on. That I need a computer to keep things straight.
You sent me a picture yesterday of just a young lad that you were, and you're off running through the farm fields back in the day. So you grew up right down the road here on Highway 14, didn't you?
I did, on one of the knee farms. There were, I think, seven knee farms when I was growing up. And, of course, as we all know, is the number of family farms has just precipitously declined over the last couple decades. And now there's only a couple left. But, no, I grew up on the farm. And growing up in this part of the world was very much what kind of set me on my path to what I did professionally for many years. And I have to mention Pine River School, because when you spend 8 years in a one-room schoolhouse with 18 or 20 other kids, that's a big part of your life. And you've seen the schoolhouse down here, the brick schoolhouse across from Quick Trip at County O. And Myrna Tony, and I have to mention Myrna, because she's responsible once the schoolhouse reverted from the Richland School District back to the Tonys, who originally owned the land, is she's fixed that up. And it's really looking nice. It was kind of pretty sad shape for a while. So Myrna, I really congratulate you for that, and it's a big addition to the look of the area. But another big factor of Pine River School is right across from the school, where the farm where Walmart is now was the Jewel farm, or one of the Jewel farms, and Kenneth and Ruby Jewel had kids that were our age. And so Dick Jewell and Roderick and I and my brother and Ronald Fry from the motel over here, we went exploring and running around the woods and down to the river and fishing and swimming and hunting and this, that, and the other thing. And that's sort of what I've kept up doing my whole life, except I'm a little more focused only on the plants. They don't run away like the squirrels do, and they don't swim away like the fish do.
Well, of course, your mother, Frida, was a longtime teacher, so she was your first teacher. But what about teachers that you had, Michael, that maybe influenced you and got you headed in that profession?
Well, for 8 years, and Pine River School was one of the very last schools in Wisconsin where all 8 grades were in a one-room school, one-room rural school. So for 8 years, I only had 3 teachers. And for the first 5, it was Mrs. Phyllis Willis. And I just remember her. I just remember that the times were good, and I must have learned a lot, and she was a very nice teacher. And then for 6th grade, it was Lois Nix, and she was a nice teacher. She was the aunt of Cardinal Raymond Burke. So everything is connected, and I'll get back to this several times maybe. And then for the last 2 years, I had Mrs. Carolyn Freeman. And Mrs. Freeman was a wonderful teacher. And I can remember one day she took us all, and we trooped down County O from the Pine River School. We trooped on down to the Pine River Bottoms, and we looked at bird nests and flowers and this, that, and the other thing. And Carolyn Freeman, if you're listening, I thank you for the opportunity you gave all of us to learn about nature and to realize that an education was important. Mrs. Freeman is up at Schmidt now, Schmidt Woodland Hills. She's just about 101 years old, excuse me, and sharp as a tack, and I should go visit her today.
That's quite an honor to have one of your teachers still living and able to converse with her. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and there are other people up there.
Uh-huh.
And that is one reason or probably the main reason that when I retired, because I had been living in Chicago for 5 years, working at the Field Museum of Natural History after I got my degrees at the UW in Madison. Then I went and spent 30 years at the New York Botanical Garden, which is situated in the middle of the Bronx. And I lived just a couple blocks away from the Botanical Garden, which is very convenient because I didn't have to have a big commute. And I decided that, you know, 30 years of living in the Bronx, excuse me, is probably enough. And breathing in all the pollution and still coughing that up, I think. So anyway, when I did retire, I decided I'm going to move away from the Bronx, but there really is only one choice, and that's moving back to the family farm on Highway 14, because I have so many connections here, including Phil Nee at WRCO. And one thing that you learn when you come back, because I'd been gone so long, is you meet people. And there are two questions that get asked. So the first one is, what year did you graduate from Richland Center High School? So that puts you in a particular age group, and if you weren't in the same age group as that person, very likely their sister was in the group with your brother or something like that. So there is a connection.
What year was it, by the way?
I graduated in 65.
Okay.
And the other question everybody asks is, are you related to Phil Nee? And I won't necessarily tell you whether I say yes or no. No, I always say yes.
That's awesome. My question was always, was your dad Jim Nee the Raleigh man? Because
he was
very famous around here because he went to all the farms, but my dad was not Jim Nee the Raleigh man. It was a different Jim Nee.
No, we called him Jim Nee the Peddler.
The Peddler, okay.
And your father was Jimmy Nee.
Yep.
Jimmy and Rosie. So we just called him Jim Nee the Peddler. But of the six original Nee brothers, one, Leo, supposedly from what I've heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, went out west, got killed in a bar fight. It wasn't his fault. He just got accidentally shot and was never heard from again.
Hmm.
And I have no idea where he was killed, where he was buried, what he was doing, how old he was, or anything. He's just lost. But of the other five sons, four of them stayed around this area, including your great-grandfather and my great-grandfather. And one of them went to the Broadhead area down in, I guess it's Greene County. And they were kind of off there, and we didn't know much about them. But Jimmy Nee, the peddler, the Raleigh man, had moved back here because his wife was a nurse. She was Orion, but she was from Racine, I think it was, and isn't related to the Ryans around here. And she was a nurse and worked at the Richland Hospital.
Okay.
So Jimmy Nee the peddler came back, and he was the Raleigh man, and so everybody knew him because he went all around selling spices or whatever. He was in his wagon and chatting with people.
Yeah. It was a different time, that's for sure.
It was a different time.
So you graduated here in 65 and went to UW-Madison then, Michael? And
yeah, I went to Madison, got my undergraduate degree and my PhD at Madison. And it was just very convenient to get my PhD there, and it was a good situation, a good professor. So I stayed on there rather than going someplace else. And then I got for 4.5 years, I spent in Chicago at the Field Museum of Natural History on a National Science Foundation grant working on the plants of eastern Mexico. So I would drive down to Mexico, and that's a long drive, every year and spend 2 months there running around the countryside, up in the mountains and down at the seashore and every place in between. and collecting plants. And they would go back to Field Museum of Natural History, and then I'd be in Mexico for 2 months, and then for 10 months I'd be back at Chicago identifying my plants and writing up treatments of some of them. We were publishing a series of books on the plants of this state of eastern Mexico. And while I was there, I was associated with a, it was not actually a university, it was a research organization, a government research organization situated in the botanical garden on the edge of the city. And so I had colleagues and lots of students were always there. And I would go out in the field with students and work with them or by myself sometimes. And it was a very nice situation. I made a lot of friends. It was a very formative part of my education. And I just haven't had the time to keep up with working in eastern Mexico because I have too much other stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff that I had to do is when I went to the New York Botanical Garden, got a position there as a researcher, and they have a between 12 and 15 PhD level researchers at the Botanical Garden in New York. It's one of the world's, certainly the New World's, main centers of botanical investigation and study and publication. And when I went there, they said, if you want a job with us, you either have to work in the rainforest of the eastern coast of Brazil or these strange Tepuy Mountains in southernmost Venezuela in the middle of the rainforest, or southwestern Amazon of Brazil, or Bolivia. And I don't really remember why I chose Bolivia, but it turned out to be a very good choice, I think, because where I was working turns out to be as far south of the equator as the state of Veracruz, Mexico, is north of the equator where I was working. It has lowland rainforests, it has scrub forests, it has desert, it has mountains which go way up above the tree line. So I was kind of in the same kind of situation, but kind of different. And when I went there, I had to choose, where am I going to be? Where is my center of research going to be? And you go to La Paz, and La Paz is this city sitting in a giant gully in the midst of the highlands, and it's cold and it's dry. And every botanist in the history of the world who's gone to Bolivia has gone to La Paz. So that was kind of taken. There were people there doing a lot of research. Cochabamba was the second biggest city, and it's a very, very nice place, very pleasant climate. It's usually pretty dry, but it's kind of cool and crisp at night and warm in the daytime. But I don't know. I went to Santa Cruz, which is down in the lowlands, and half of Bolivia, despite what you see when you see pictures of Bolivia with llamas and people out on the Altiplano digging potatoes, is Santa Cruz is down in the lowlands, which is half of Bolivia, and it's about as far above sea level as we are right here in Richland Center. And it's in the middle of an agricultural zone where they grow corn, soybeans, and since it's more tropical, of course, they can have cotton and rice and sesame seeds and all sorts of other things. And it's hot and humid all year long, but it has a lot more oxygen in the air than way up in the mountains. So anyway, I set myself up there, and at that time, since I'm always working with the local botanists, they were just beginning, and the university, there was one university in the city, and it had agronomy, biology, and forestry. So that's exactly the kind of situation I wanted to be in. Nowadays, there's a bunch of private universities that sprung up, but they have mainly concentrated on medicine, law, and business, that sort of thing. So the main public university is still the only one that has these three biologically oriented subjects. So I got started there, and very soon we decided, myself and another person and the biology professor, we decided to make a real natural history museum at the university. So we started it up, and Paolo, it was this crazy Italian who just kind of showed up in Bolivia, but very active, and he was responsible for beginning the insect part. And I was responsible for botany, and Teresa Centurion, the professor at the university, was responsible for fighting with the university officials constantly and vociferously to get funds, space and funds. And for several years, it was the kind of situation where the Natural History Museum, their yearly budget was something like $200. And Bolivia is, or was, and probably is now, the second or third most poorest country in the whole New World. So they do have economic problems, which I won't necessarily get into, but if you deal with politics or economics, do not get into the situation of Bolivia back in the late 1980s when they had 24,000% a year inflation. It was just absolutely insane. I don't know how people survived, because if you get paid, you had a job and you got paid in Bolivian money, you would get your paycheck and you would run to the bank, cash it in, run back out and just buy things, because a week later your money would be worth 5-10% less, and a month later it would be worth 20% what it was when you got paid. So you had to, it was insane. It's better now, but now it's getting worse. I won't go into all the politics of Bolivia, because it's really pretty bizarre. But despite the fact that Bolivia is chaotic in many ways and very poor, it's a pretty safe place for me to do my sort of work. I actually have essentially no problems just driving anywhere I want in the country and getting out and collecting plants and taking pictures and so on. One time somebody asked me, some American asked me, "Do you carry a gun?" And I was just kind of dumbfounded, and I looked at him, I said, "Huh?" It's something that never occurred to me. It's like asking somebody around here, "Do you carry a gun when you go up to Rock Bridge to climb up and walk on the trail on the top up there?"
Right.
Well, of course not. What's going to happen? Is a squirrel going to shoot you?
Well, I think people maybe have the misconception, because that was one of the things I thought about, too. Did you ever fear? Because, you know, I guess we know a lot of those countries for, you know, being the drug culture and things like that. But were you ever fearful?
Careful more than fearful. And, for example, I've been working for many years, especially at the beginning, and this is one of the books that I published on the plants of the national park, Amboro National Park, is a very interesting place. Is I had, I think, three students already, and we were going out to explore in the jungles in the lowland part of the national park, and you have to drive to it. It takes 2 hours from the city to get there. And then you're at the edge of the park, and you just go in, walk around, look at the plants, and do your stuff. And I had to get all the permits from the National Park people. So I had been consulting with them. And the day before we were going, I went to the National Park office to get my final permit. And I said, yeah, we're going into this place whose name I don't even remember. And I had actually been there before. And he said, have you looked at the newspaper? He said they had just raided a cocaine factory exactly where we were going. And, well, that meant that we weren't going to go there.
I bet.
So what we did is I just took the students and I went about 20 miles away on a different road and went into the national park from a different area, and we had no problems. So essentially, if you keep your ears out, you generally don't have any particular problems like that. And what you hear in the news up here, you don't hear any news from Bolivia unless at least 40 people have died in a bus going off the edge of a mountain, or 30 people have been killed in political violence. But that doesn't happen very often. It did happen, actually, while I was down there. I was down there in November and December of last year. And I came back, and a few weeks later, I heard that there was some political violence, and a couple policemen had been killed by a mob. But mobs don't go after people like me. The real problem is the chaos that happens because the political atmosphere is such in Bolivia that how to resolve a problem is to go on strike or block the roads. So it's a situation like if someone were to block the roads between Milwaukee, Madison, and Chicago, block them all off for a week or 2 weeks, and the trucks can't get through, and the cars can't get through, and people can't get through, and then eventually they get tired and they drop the roadblock. But if there are roadblocks, then it's hard to get around because I can't get through sometimes. Do you want to hear a story about roadblocks?
Sure.
It was about 3 years ago. There was a, can't even remember why the whole country was on a big strike. I think it had to do with the president, the ex-president, was by law, by the Constitution, could only run for president for 2 terms. Well, he decided he was indispensable and he was going to run for a 3rd term. And the Supreme Court said no. And then he packed the Supreme Court with his people and they said, oh, sure, go ahead. And then they had a referendum, countrywide referendum, and the people voted, no, you can't run for president again. And during all of this, it got very chaotic, and there were roadblocks and so on. But I had gone to Bolivia just as this was starting, and I got there on a Thursday, I think, and they said, you better get out of town because everything's going to get shut down. So I got my stuff ready and drove to this nice little town up in the mountains about 2 hours away. Good place to work and very pleasant place. And set myself up. And with the strike and the roadblocks, the tanker trucks couldn't get through, so there's no gasoline. Well, I had enough in my car that I could go here 10 miles and go there 5 miles and the next day go someplace 4 miles this way. And I just did my work. But I was getting low on gas. And finally I heard a rumor that the gas truck was going to come through and the filling station would have gas. So I sat in a big long line at the filling station for a couple hours, and then I heard that the tanker truck wasn't coming through. So I think it was the next day I heard a rumor that it was going to come through. So I got back and I spent 4 hours in the line and finally got half a tank of gas because they were rationing the gas to individual cars. So that was enough to get me back to the big city. So I take off, and everything is fine for the first hour and three quarters until I hit the first roadblock. And the first roadblock was by the people of the ex-president who were blocking the road. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to just play dumb. So I was doing this all in Spanish, but I'll do it in English right now so you can understand exactly what I was doing. So I got to the roadblock. My Spanish is perfectly good, but I got to the roadblock and I said, me tourist, me want go home, me apartment in Santa Cruz near zoo. Well, they don't understand what all is going on, but I sound pretty innocent, and I think they let me through. And then you go a little ways, and there's another roadblock with the same people. And this time they wouldn't let me through, but they were letting a few trucks go through that were favorable to their side of the politics. So I got behind one of the trucks, and as soon as they raised the barrier for him to go through, I was right behind him, and I snuck through. So I got through four roadblocks like this, either bluffing my way or sneaking my way through. And then I hit the fifth roadblock, and the fifth roadblock was people from Santa Cruz who were on the other side politically. And since I'm from Santa Cruz, and I was kind of, I don't get into politics down there, but I was kind of favorable to their side, is I go up and say, hi, I've just been up to San Maipata and working. Finally, I got gasoline, and I'm going back, and my apartment's over near the zoo, and can I get through your roadblock? Well, I said, you can't really get through. We're not letting anybody through. But if you go back down the highway here, two blocks into that yellow house and turn in that side street and go three blocks this way and then turn, you can get to the next roadblock and see what happens. So after about 4 hours of this, well, 2 hours of this, is I finally, I think I had left San Maipata about 10:30 in the morning. By 4:30 in the afternoon, I pulled into my apartment.
Did you still have gas, though, after all that time?
I had enough gas, enough. Yeah. Okay. I didn't have to worry about that.
Michael Nee, our guest on The Morning Show, renowned botanist, and we're telling stories here on The Morning Show. We'll have more coming up in a moment.
Discover hidden gems and unbeatable deals at the Family Thrift Shop in downtown Richland Center. Find gently used clothing for men, women, and children, plus household goods, seasonal decor, books, and toys. Be sure to check out the Bargain Zone for even bigger savings. Best of all, when you shop, donate, or volunteer, you're giving back, helping support families in need right here in the greater Richland County area. Stop by today and see what treasures you can find at the Family Thrift Shop.
Hi, it's me, Flo, here to tell you that with a Progressive Home and Auto Bundle, you get 24/7 protection, so you're covered no matter where the day takes you.
Even bad hair day?
Yep.
And tree branch fell on my car day?
Especially that day. Progressive has you covered 24/7 for your home and auto.
How about thought it was chicken, but it was tuna day? Or overnight construction outside my bedroom day?
Those days too.
Great, because that was each day this week.
Been there. Well, at least your home and auto are covered every day with Progressive.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sexsonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled. Customer satisfaction is a must. And Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
Join the legacy at Scott's Industries, a proud family-owned business for 75 years. They're expanding and looking for dedicated team members. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. No experience necessary, just bring your enthusiasm. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscadet. Or give them a call, 739-3171, to learn more. Scott's Industries, where opportunity meets tradition.
Republicans are already talking about fixes that may have to be made to their not-so-beautiful bill. This bill was rushed through Congress so quickly, no one voting for it knew all of what was in it. Now that details are coming out, those who voted for it are starting to feel a little queasy, and they should. So start asking yourself, what exactly will my tax cut be? Who may be losing access to Medicare, which is called Badger Care in Wisconsin? Who will be losing access to the Supplemental Nutrition Program, or SNAP? And who will go hungry as a result? The answers may bother you a lot. So don't stop contacting your representatives. Let them know what you see in this bill. And if it doesn't match your values, let them know. Wisconsinites believe in taking care of one another. So should our political representatives. This message is brought to you by Economic Equity Now.
Hey, sis. How much is a million?
I don't know, but it sounds like a lot.
It is. Do you know there's almost 14 million kids? They don't have enough food?
Connor, all kids should have the food they need to grow and play.
One of five kids in America is food insecure, with a significant impact in rural areas. You can help. The National Association of Farm Broadcasting invites you to help the nearly 14 million kids facing hunger in America. Go to NAFBHunger.com and help end hunger.
You're not in the habit of leaving yield in the field. You don't let the acres hole out on you. No bushel of corn gets left behind. That's why you choose top performers like DeKalb brand VT4 Pro with RNAi technology. It's got gigantic performance potential with the research to prove it. And five modes of action to protect against pests. Ready to go for the yield? Talk to your DeKalb representative. Never settle. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
On our morning show from WRCO, Michael Nee is our guest in the studio, a renowned botanist and also the publisher of Nee News. Was that ever a New York Times bestseller list?
I don't think I have ever gotten very famous for that, or will get very famous for the other things I do.
And a caller wondered about Mike Nee. He was, of course, a renowned wrestler, state wrestler for Richland Center High School, but you're not that guy.
I'm Michael H. Nee, and Michael J. Nee grew up on the farm next door, and he was the wrestler. He was about 8 years younger than me.
He could probably still pin you, though, back in the day.
I don't know about that. Yeah. I could pin. I might be, well, he might be able to pin me now.
Yeah.
But when I grew up, there were four Michael Nees in the immediate vicinity. So there's my father's Uncle Mike over by Aubrey had the farm. And then next door was my father's cousin Mick. And my father's cousin Tom Nee had a son, Mickey. That's Michael Nee, the wrestler. So there's Michael, Mick, Mickey. No, Mike, Mickey, Mick, and Michael, and I've stayed Michael, but I'm not the wrestler. And what I actually do, I've been saying sort of in general that I study plants and investigate and so on. What I do is I go out and I snip off twigs off a tree or pull up a flower out of the ground and put it into a newspaper, and I have a little notebook along, and I write down a number for, let's say, the tree. See if I can find a tree here. And I will give the scientific name if I know what it is, and I'll say tree 20 feet tall, 10 inches in diameter, fruit bright red, mature, and sweet and tasty. Some of the information. And then that gets put into a sheet of newspaper with that number so I can keep track of things. And this is pressed and dried between cardboards and blotting paper. And once it's pressed and dried, they will essentially stay like that forever. As long as they're kept cool, dry, and away from bugs.
Oh, you have some examples too, some visuals here.
And they are pasted onto a special sheet of permanent paper, non-acidic paper, which is 12 by 18 inches, and it's glued on essentially with Elmer's glue, along with a label. And this particular label says, it has a scientific name, Salix alba, Wisconsin, Vernon County, 5 miles southwest of Lafarge, Tunnelville Cliffs Preserve, and ridgetop old fields or pastures, vigorous tree with two trunks 50 centimeters in diameter, blah, blah, twigs not brittle at base, things that are not visible from the specimen itself. And these then, I have a small collection of things like willows and asters and goldenrods, which have a lot of species in Richland County and surrounding counties, and they're kind of difficult. So if I have these specimens to compare another one that I collect, then I'm more sure of the identification. And I only have a few hundred in a cabinet at home, but the Missouri Botanical Garden and the New York Botanical Garden both have over 7 million of these specimens, and they're filed away. Very specifically, all the oaks are in one place and the willows are in another place. And so you can find things, and people can study these. And there are specimens in these herbaria that date from 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. And they are permanently kept so they can be studied for various reasons. The University of Wisconsin, of course, has the Wisconsin State Herbarium, which is very important because it keeps track of all the plants in Wisconsin. And I'm kind of particularly interested in willows because there's both a crack willow and a white willow, and how to tell them apart. They're both introduced, and one of them's very common, and the other one is not common, but how to tell them apart, and what is their distribution in Richland County and in the states, in all of the counties of the state. Now, if I go through my collection here, which I will do, hopefully.
That's a big collection.
I'm sorry, this is not an obsession, not an obsession, not an obsession. But
I'm impressed that that you still have them. And I have to think, too, some of the things that you mentioned, the plants are obviously some that are extinct, right, that have been around for 300 years or were, you know, collected that long ago.
Well, that's something that only having this sort of a collection, a big one for the state of Wisconsin or generally over the entire world, is that's the way you know that something is extinct. Or that it still exists because people are still finding it, and or whether it's a new species or not. Mm-hmm. So one time in Bolivia, in the rainforest at the base of the mountains on a rainy day, and I'm walking around with my boots all covered with mud and I'm dripping wet, is I see great big flower petals on the ground. And then I found an old fruit on the ground. And I can't really tell what's going on up in the tree because that's 50 feet above me, but I say, this is a magnolia. I don't think there's any magnolias in Bolivia that are known. So eventually, with more exploration, and one of my students had been exploring, we get more material, and sure enough, it's a magnolia or magnolia relative, and it's the first time they had been found in Bolivia. And it differs from all the other magnolias that have been found in Peru, Ecuador, and Colombia in the northern part of the Andes. So I made up a description and a discussion of this, and I published a little paper in a scientific journal and named it, and the plant is now known as Magnolia boliviana, with my name after it.
Ah.
So that's one of, I haven't counted up recently, I think I've named about 20 or 30 new species, mostly from Bolivia. And yesterday I got an email from Brazil. I'd been working at one time I worked on a gigantic forest inventory in the middle of the Amazon rainforest. And the guy said, we have got more material of this tree and we've decided it's a new species. Would you like to collaborate on the publication, article in a scientific journal? So I wrote back and said yes, but I don't have any of the details yet.
So you're retired, but you're not. You're still working at it, it sounds like.
The thing about being retired is you're free to work all of the time.
Good point. You know, we're getting some correspondence here as well, Michael, putting you to the test. What kind of plum tree should you plant to cross-pollinate with another plum tree?
I'm afraid you're going to have to ask somebody at a nursery or somebody that grows plums at an orchard about that, because I don't really deal with the cultivated plants like that.
Okay. You have volumes of books. In fact, you brought a couple of them. You were one of the co-publishers of this particular book.
Catalog of the Vascular Plants of Bolivia. It's 1,471 pages.
I'll drop it here. There it is.
Of real snoozeville. If you go through this, it's page after page of a scientific name in Latin and something in Spanish, and it says which of the states or departments of Bolivia it's been found in, what altitude above sea level, and whether it's a tree or a shrub or a vine. And that goes on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. But the book is a distillation of decades, centuries, actually, of exploration in Bolivia, especially in recent years. And I'm part of that. I wrote part of the book, but I had to revise and edit almost all of the rest of it, because we had over 100 collaborators around the world who are experts in particular groups. Somebody's an expert in orchids, and somebody's an expert in grasses, and somebody in oak trees, and so on. And they would send in a manuscript, and I would have to go through it and check it and make some corrections or additions or whatever. So I spent a lot of time on that, besides my time in the field in Bolivia doing the collecting of specimens. And one thing that I could say, which has kind of been an adjunct to my real job, is collecting wood. And these wood specimens here are kind of a standard size of 3 inches by 6 inches by 1/2 inch thick. And this one is red cedar, which I got in Richland County, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And of course, it smells like red cedar.
All right.
And here is a white pine from Grant County, Wisconsin, and a black cherry from Richland County, Wisconsin. And so I have a collection of these, all sorts of different kind of wood, mostly from the United States, a few from Bolivia. And I only have about 1,000 in my little collection, which I'll eventually give to another university, because I'm not going to take them when I'm gone.
Take them with you.
But the USDA Forest Products Lab in Madison, Wisconsin has the world's largest wood collection, with over 100,000 of these blocks filed away in drawers, just chest of drawers, just like you put your socks in at home. But they have 105,000, I think, specimens. So I always make sure that one of every one of my collections goes to the USDA Forest Products Lab in Madison.
I knew that you lived in New York for a long time, or in the Bronx, a part of the New York Botanical Garden. I had to think about how life moves here, and then you go to New York, and, you know, my first time in New York, I got off the plane, we were in a shuttle, and I'm sitting in the front seat, and people are in the crosswalk, and the driver just hits the accelerator and the horn at the same time, you know, and I'm thinking, these people are going to get hit. They didn't, but, you know, life moves a little bit differently there, doesn't it?
Life in Richland County is 100% different from life in the Bronx. And when I try to cross a street around here, I am very surprised when cars will actually stop. In the Bronx, what you do is you look to your right and to your left and then to your right, and then you scurry across as fast as you can go. Otherwise, you'll end up as roadkill.
And then people are coming at you at the same time. You just somehow don't run into one another. You just, it's amazing.
It's very different. And around here, if I hear one car honk once a month, I'm kind of surprised. Honking is constant in New York.
That was one of my thoughts, too. I thought if you own a car in New York that doesn't have a horn, you better get rid of it because it's no good to you. Ah, it's been fascinating stuff. Michael, anything else you want to add today?
Well, you didn't ask about mosquitoes and hot and all of that. Is the worst awful place I've been for mosquitoes, and it was hot and humid and full of spiny bushes, and I was tramping around and miserable. Was not in the Amazon. It was along Willow Creek, about half mile downstream from your farm. We kept heifers on summer pasture at Ed and Mabel Klinzing's farm.
Oh, yeah.
And one day one of them was missing, and my dad sent me out to find that heifer, and I wandered around in that woods on the other side of the creek, and I did not find that heifer. It turns out she was over at Toby Anderson's hanging around with the other cows in his barnyard.
Yeah, the mosquitoes have been known to be down around there. Back in the day before he had Buggins and all that stuff.
Right.
Right, indeed. Michael, will come back and see us again sometime.
Okay, if I got any more tales to tell.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Or why I say that the word adventure is merely a euphemism for the phrase bad planning.
Michael Nee joining us on WRCO Radio talking about his career and another one of Richland County's most interesting folks here on The Morning Show.
C.S. Lewis said, "You can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending." This is Mark Jelinek of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. We encourage you to savor the moments you have with family and friends, leaving you with few regrets in the end. And when the time comes to celebrate a life well lived, we will be ready to support and serve you at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Now is the time to make sure your vehicle is tuned up for summer. Hi, this is Sean from Sean's Auto Repair and Performance. We'll check your coolant, do a radiator flush, or give you that tune-up you need. Or maybe it's a new set of tires or an alignment. We can do that too. Whether it's cars, trucks, or SUVs, you'll get courteous, quality, professional service for imports and domestics. Call us now at 608-649-AUTO. That's 649-2886. Sean's Auto Repair and Performance, 184 East Mill Street, downtown Richland Center. People who care about your car.
No matter what you're craving, it's always better with an ice-cold, made-fresh A&W root beer in a frosty mug. For over 100 years, A&W has been crafting that signature flavor with real cane sugar and a secret blend of ingredients that's downright delicious. Whether it's a hot summer day or just time for a treat, nothing hits the spot like A&W root beer. Stop by and sip the tradition. Made fresh and served right. Your hometown A&W is on Highway 61 in Boscobel.
Pappas Trading Post in Arena is Southern Wisconsin's number one Matthews and Mission bow retailer. Pappas Trading Post offers you a team of experienced professionals ready to help you get the perfect new bow, crossbow, arrows, or accessories for the season. Pappas team can also tune up your current bow for peak performance when it matters most. And they have a 40-yard indoor range to sharpen your aim. Visit Pappas Trading Post, 2 miles west of Arena on the corner of Highway 14 and H.
Open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturday, 9 to 5. The Richland Hospital and Clinics wants you to stay sun smart until the sun sets. Peak UV hours are between 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., the time when it is easiest to suffer sun damage. Make sure you schedule a yearly skin check with your provider and pay close attention to any spots you see that have changed or grown. If necessary, you can have a skin biopsy at the Richland Hospital and Clinics within 1 to 2 weeks of referral. Test results are back within 3 to 5 business days. Remember to wear your sunscreen.
Hillsborough Equipment sells outdoor power equipment, services outdoor power equipment, and takes care of the people who depend on their outdoor power equipment. With an 11,000 square foot shop, over $1 million in parts, and multiple trained technicians, Hillsborough Equipment will get you tuned up and ready to go. From the combines in the field to the lawnmower and chainsaw in your yard, they service it all, any make, any model. See the service experts at Hillsborough Equipment or call 489-2275.
Are you looking for a meaningful way to give back to your community? Passages is looking for compassionate, motivated volunteers to join our team. We provide men, women, and children survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault with free, confidential services regardless of age, sex, or gender identity. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, from yard cleanup, donation sorting and organizing, and fundraising support, to shelter advocacy and survivor support. There are also a couple of larger outdoor projects that would be great for teams. Do you want to share a skill? We're also launching new life skills programming and are seeking volunteers to lead classes such as yoga, sewing, crocheting, cooking, meditation, grounding exercises, and more. Whether you're interested in direct client support or behind-the-scenes help, there's a place for you at Passages. Did you know that every hour you volunteer helps Passages meet its grant match? Learn more by visiting our website at passages.com.